Hello and welcome to Queer Love Forever, the podcast where I give you advice, whether you asked for it or not. Other than that, food for thought on queer relationships, love, connection and community. I'm Kim, they them, and I'm the queer matchmaker. This week I will be answering some of your questions, and as always, please do send in your questions, any dating woes, friendship dramas, anything to do with community, connection, love, romance, anything that you'd like me to weigh in on. You can do that anonymously via the Google form linked in the show notes. And also please do comment and follow and subscribe and all of those things on Spotify. I would love to have some comments or reviews to read out at the beginning of the podcast like they do on the Polyester podcast. So write me something nice. And yeah, I've tried to record this episode so many times, so we're just going to get through it this time. And I'll start with a bit of an update because I'm actually feeling pretty good. I'm having a lovely week. I submitted my tax return on Monday, and I've been finding work really fun. I mean, the client sessions that I do, the one-to-one sessions, are always like a really connected, meaningful time, regardless of anything else. But admin has been really flowy and quite fun. I've been working on some projects that are getting to like a really satisfying point. And of course, there's lots of event prep for events that are far enough away in the future to not be stressful yet. So I'm enjoying it. I'm in a nice rhythm. I also went to a lovely event this week at the Common Press. It was a conversation between two authors about hedonism and pleasure. It was called Souls and Sins, with Prashita Maheshwari Alpin and Adam Smith, the authors of Roses for Hedone and Soulmates, respectively. And it was hosted by Boy Wife. And the talk and the conversations that came afterwards in the Q&A and just in the room afterwards was really inspiring and affirming. I'm continuing to enjoy being an attendee at queer events again and not just running queer events to like sit in community like that. I made a lot of notes during the event, and I'm going to leave it all up in my brain to percolate. I definitely want to talk about some of the topics and themes that came up. What I really liked was the perspective of like intentional hedonism, critical hedonism, what Prashita called hedonofuturism, the process of being conscious and intentional about how we engage with the pleasurable experiences of being alive. All of the experiences of being alive, really. And seeing it not just as kind of turning to pleasure as a form of escapism or celebration, but as a process of just existing. It's just something we actually do so rarely, to just experience the moment and the sensations it can bring, the humanness of this concept. I mean, like, hedonism has kind of like negative baggage attached to it as a word, but it was kind of reframed in the book and in the talk to make it clear how having access to this, like, being in the moment, experiencing the full tapestry of human experience. It was like really interesting to see it reframed that way, and to talk about how having access to this is really a vital part of being alive and a right that we don't all have, because of politics, because of healthcare, lots of reasons. And yeah, there was lots of important conversations about bringing pleasure into politics to address that lack of access. It was really interesting. And I haven't read the books yet. I've read a little bit of Roses of Hedone, but I really recommend just these two human beings and their thoughts. And my reading list is very long, so I can't allow a single new book into my flat for a while. It's a bit ridiculous. But anyway, I have linked both of the authors and also a podcast episode that they recorded recently about similar topics, talking about pleasure. So yeah, if you're interested, you can check it out. Now to your questions. There's quite a few that I want to get through, so I'll jump right in with the first one. But first, I'm just going to close my door because the wind is creaking it back and forth. Okay. So, first question. This was submitted via the anonymous form. And the question is, red flags to look out for. I assume they mean in dating. I love this question. It's such a human thing to want to know what to look out for, to be like, oh, what danger is there that I should keep in mind? How can I spot the signs of trouble ahead of time and not get hurt? And listen, I think you can find loads of answers to this, loads of infographics and listicles full of the classic signs of narcissism or the fuckboy calling cards that you can test for and identify out in the wild, like a little book of mushroom varieties to bring into the woods, like a field guide to dating. You can definitely find these collections of red flags to look out for, and it's definitely useful to know what to look out for in terms of figuring out what you want in a relationship, levels of communication that are important to you. It's good to know how to check in with your own feelings about a date or a partner, and of course spotting potentially dangerous or abusive behaviour. But I want to talk about what is behind this question and why focusing on red flags and what to look out for, what to avoid, can actually be a bit of a red herring. The truth is, if your dating process is highly analytical and involves a lot of scanning the environment for red flags, you're going to have a really hard time connecting. Anyone who has spoken to me for more than 2 minutes over the past month, all of my clients, all of my friends, my therapist, and, you know, anyone, any barista or shop, oh my God, I've run out of words. Anyone that's come into contact with me over the past month, they're all very well aware that I'm obsessed with the idea of connection. If you've been listening to this podcast lately, it's probably clear as well. I'm having a sometimes wonderful and sometimes terrible time sifting through the nature of human connection, like what it actually is, when it can happen, when it can't, and what isn't possible within even the deepest, most intimate connections. And you can see that this is an obsession for me at the moment. And what is definitely true is that you can never know someone fully, and that's so annoying, but you can never completely understand their perspective, their emotions, their experience. You can never really know everything that makes them who they are. You can't see through their eyes. We can get close to that. We can get close to it in relationships. We can gesture to each other. We can form a thesis about who someone is and begin to understand their ways of thinking, and sometimes we can feel as if we know them and can like predict their behavior. Sometimes though, especially early on in dating, we can be two people living in completely different realities, different with each of you with different concepts of what the connection is, what it means, what the words we say to each other mean, what the way we treat each other means, like two people drawing completely different conclusions about what's happening. It's like two people pointing past each other at a shadow of the person on the wall, or like usually a reflection of ourselves. and I choose to believe that this is what the issue usually is in relationships, that most people aren't roaming about the world intending to fool or trick or hurt the people that they're dating. Some people are malicious for sure, but it seems to me that most of the hurting that happens in relationships and dating arises accidentally. Okay, where am I going with this? Are we going to make it back around to red flags? Right, okay, so yes, there are some sort of classic psychological processes that pop up and can tell you something about where the other person is at. But the only way to be in connection with someone is to give them the chance to take part and tell you where they're at, to be involved in the idea that you have of them in your head, rather than you just kind of like deducing it based on subtle signs and behaviors and word choices. You have to do your half of the interaction the best you can, and then offer the space for them to do their half of the interaction. rather than trying to predict where they're at with a forensic level of behaviour and message analysis and maybe a few friends weighing in as well. And it is scary. There's no doubt about that. It's scary to be vulnerable enough to share where you are, how you're seeing things, and ask somebody how they're seeing things. There is no doubt that while this concept is simple, it's not easy. But it's the only way to actually connect, to collaborate and share, to get close to having the same experience of this relationship, of this reality. Is this making sense? Let me try and explain myself in a few words. Let's take a date for an example. Okay, so a classic date, there's some conversation, there's some eye contact, there's some body language, and it takes place over a few hours. So it could be written down as a script with stage direction, and all in, if it was all written down in black and white on a page, you could probably call that a clear and complete description of what has happened between the two people. But that is not really how we experience dates, is it? There is much more involved in our perception of what has occurred on a date and what it means about the person that you just walked with to the bus stop. Lots of things affect it. How your day was, what you listened to on the way to the date, your past dating experience that is still swirling around in your subconscious, your socialization, the culture you grew up in, the outfit you put on and what that means to you, whether you have three more dates lined up this week or not, if this is your first date in a really long time. And for them too, all of those things, and you know, what your outfit reminds them of, what your choice of drink suggests to them, the perfume you wear and their association with it, the friends that you remind them of, how loud the date location was, whether there were other couples or other queer people around, even things that feel undeniable, like a sense of chemistry, a flirty energy or a spark, is all filtered through your perspective, which is incredibly not the same as the other person's perspective. The truth is, you can never know someone else's intentions, but you can always share your own and ask them to do so in return. You can present your perspective and the way you feel to them with the level of honesty that feels right, the level of honesty you would want them to give. You can always show your hand and ask to swap notes, seek to collaborate on your view of what is happening between you, on how the date went. And of course, there is never a guarantee that they feel the same. So, I mean, that's part of what makes sharing your perspective scary, is that they maybe didn't see it that way, they don't agree. And noticing a difference between your perspectives can be painful. It could mean feeling vulnerable from being more invested than they are, maybe disappointed that you're feeling more for them than they are for you. Sometimes the difference is okay, like it doesn't mean the connection has to end. Different people feel comfortable, open and connected at different rates, you know, like feelings that grow more slowly can still be, you know, very strong and you can trust them. But sometimes a difference means that the connection should really stop. And I that's the fear, right? That you'll notice a difference in how you're both experiencing the dates, and that will mean you have to stop dating. And when that sort of difference that means the connection has to stop is there, it already exists. To avoid finding the difference won't help. It won't allow for the connection to continue either. You'll just both be in different worlds on the same date, one of you reading it romantic or deep and the other reading it as friendly or casual. And sometimes it's just not a good fit. You're just not on the same page or in the same level of intensity, looking for different things. And it can be really hard to accept that and grieve what you wanted it to be. And for the ones who aren't feeling things so intensely or romantically, there can be an impulse to people please and there's lower intensity for you. You can want to keep that to yourself because the other person seems to be enjoying it, you don't want to disappoint them, or because it feels good for someone to want you more than you want them. But when you put it like that, it doesn't sound very kind. And sharing where you're at is important. Another question I often get and that somebody submitted is, why do people come on so strongly and then pull away? And I think that this, what we're talking about here, might be part of it. There are plenty of theories we could come up with about why, like the attachment styles involved and the personality traits that lead to such behavior. But the fact is, it is really exciting to make a new connection. It's easy to get carried away and really hard to communicate that your feelings have changed or cooled down, or realizing it was mainly driven by lust rather than anything deeper. And the fact that someone is pulling away is painful, but it really tells you all that you need to know. So I propose, instead of looking out for red flags and trying to guess at someone's intentions, feelings, and perception of what it is that's happening between the two of you, instead of that, tell them what your intentions are. Tell them how you're feeling and how you're experiencing the connection, and invite them to tell you where they're at. It's better, I think, to reach across to each other to connect in this way than to point past each other, even if what you find is that the connection isn't what you thought it was or the connection isn't what you want, because then you can grieve it and try again and find somebody who wants what you're looking for to be in reality with. And I will continue to think constantly about what human connection is, and I'll let you know what I find. But those are my thoughts on red flags. Okay, let's do another question. So here we go. Is my sex drive low, or am I just not that attracted to my partner? This is something I'm struggling with at the moment. Like, I don't know if anxiety is reducing my sex drive or if I'm actually just not that attracted to my girlfriend, or if it's like a combo. I find myself thinking, are we actually that sexually compatible, or am I just insanely distracted at the moment with drama going on in my life? Oh, I have experienced this exact situation before, and it can be such a head fuck of a thought process. It's so hard to unpick, but also so hard to put to one side and just be with your partner. Right, so we'll start with the affirmation of the fact that humans are fluid. Our sex drives fluctuate based on so many things. You mentioned stress, which can have a huge impact, but sometimes periods of low libido have no clear cause, or you only realize afterwards what was getting in the way. But seeing as you talked about stress and drama, let's talk about stress. While some of us find an increase of sex drive with stress, maybe using sex as a distraction or an outlet or even a way to kind of like escalate your physical experience to meet the stress symptoms, it's very common for increased stress to reduce your sex drive as well. There are biological mechanisms at play. You might have seen this again in lots of infographics. Many of us find the physical symptoms of stress to be inconvenient for having intimate, sexy time. It can be harder to be in the moment with your body and feel like sharing contact with someone else when you're having such fun sensations as heart palpitations, increased sweating, feelings of restlessness, headaches, muscle tension, IBS flare-ups, to name a few. So it makes sense that if you're experiencing that, you're not feeling super sexy and intimate. And of course, experiencing a constant dose of stress hormones is exhausting, and having sex usually requires energy and relaxation at the same time, so it's not conducive. And this makes sense in terms of evolution. Before, our stresses came from our phones and emails and, you know, stress from things that actually aren't threatening our lives. Back in the days before that, a prolonged state of stress would usually indicate that it's a suboptimal moment or environment to be having a child. If only you could just tell the body that there will be no baby, just some fun and intimacy with your love, and just reduce the stress, let's calm down. And when it comes to the mind, it's all about the intimacy. Sex is something inherently vulnerable. We allow another person or multiple people to come in past the barriers that we have holding out the rest of the world. Being intimate that's inherently allowing somebody into your boundary. Removing clothing as a barrier, even being alone with another person in a room, is pretty unusual in our everyday interactions. So doing that with a partner can already feel really vulnerable. So if there's something happening in your life to do with your boundaries and vulnerability, some kind of stress on them, even if it has nothing to do with your partner, it could be affecting how willing you feel to get intimate with them. For example, financial instability very easily leads to feeling constantly vulnerable in our capitalist hellscape. Trouble in your home, like in the place that you live, or drama between you and the people you live with, means that the space you usually can use to feel safe on your own isn't available. So feeling safe with others can feel really difficult if you're having problems at home. A period of change or growth in yourself, even if it's positive, can feel really vulnerable. If you're putting yourself out there at work with your creativity, or maybe you're picking through some deep emotional wounds, doing some thought processing, or thinking through difficult memories, all of this takes intentional effort to be open and soft and brave, which you then might not have so much capacity for when it comes to intimacy with your partner. So I'm going to get to the advice now. My advice is, firstly, give yourself some gentle space in this. Don't mean for that to sound so patronizing. Give yourself some gentle space in this. Stressing about how you feel will always, always lead to a spiral, because while feelings do pass and change with time and with different circumstances, they insist on being felt first. Very inconvenient of them. You have to allow yourself to feel the way that you feel. Whether that's frustrated or annoyed or sad or apathetic, whatever is coming up, name it, welcome it in, and let it be there. Because it already is. You're already feeling that way. Experience these feelings. You know, I like to use music or movement, or if that means having a conversation with someone about how you're feeling, doing some meditation. Having a think on a walk is what I do a lot. Whatever works for you, find a way to take space for those feelings and let them be felt. Next, see if you can identify what's getting in the way. But if you can't, that's okay too, don't worry about it. I get the impression from the question that you have a pretty good idea of where the stress is coming from. But if it's less clear, that's okay too. Knowing what's at play is useful for the next part, but not necessary by any means. And the next part is communicate with your partner about how you're feeling. This can be tricky. I know it can be hard when the bare honest truth might upset them, but you've got to let them into your reality and tell them what is going on for you. The chances are that they'll be picking up on it anyway, so being clear is a really helpful step. So they know what's going on. Telling them your experience rather than talking about them can be a good way to be clear. And I have a good structure for this. Essentially, you describe the situation, the physical sensations you're having, your interpretation, and emotion. So I'll do an example. So the situation is, I'm finding that my sex drive is really low right now. The sensation is, thinking about it makes my stomach drop, it makes my body stressed. You could even describe the particular physical sensations of stress that you're having. The interpretation, I imagine feeling this way forever, and I imagine it getting in the way of what we have. And then the emotion, and I feel really anxious about it. I feel scared, I feel worried. Now, this is a lot of information that could be upsetting for them to hear. So make sure you choose a time and a place that allows for them to have the reaction that they're going to have. Give them the space and energy for them to hear it and maybe get a bit upset, and have the chance to calm down and meet you in the conversation for the next part. So you'll probably know what works best for your partner. Like, some people prefer to receive, like, a little headline for a conversation like this by message so that they can have some time to process alone. Most people would like a private space for this kind of conversation, lots of time, maybe not right after work on an empty stomach. Yeah, so make sure you choose a good time and place. Now, once they've had their reaction and their feelings and your feelings have been shared and soothed and, you know, we're not in a heightened state, the conversation can continue and the two of you can collaborate on what to do next. It could be that some space is needed, some time apart. It could be a matter of finding closeness and intimacy in the meantime while your sex drive is low that isn't sexual. So, like, for example, does cuddling with no expectation of sex sound good right now? Maybe taking the time to give caring touch to each other, like massage, again, with no expectation of the touch becoming sexual. Maybe dancing together, sleeping next to each other, existing in the same room, maybe without even touching, maybe just being in each other's presence, cooking together, eating together. Perhaps you still want to feel close through these ways, but you still feel stressed about the thought of sex, and so communicating this and agreeing on some other forms of intimacy to intentionally do for now will allow them to understand what's happening and enjoy the intimacy for what it is. So, like, they can enjoy the massage and the cuddles rather than worry about why it's not turning into sex when it has done in the past. So basically, collaborate on what needs to happen for now while there is this stress, while libido is lower for you, and how you can still be connected if that's what you want. Then you've got to check back in later. If there is a clear cause, you could arrange to check back in when this has been addressed or changed, or a few weeks after this has been addressed or changed. It's not about checking back in when you know everything will be resolved, it's more about planning a time to revisit the subject and see how you're both feeling then. Knowing when the conversation will happen means you can both take the time to check in with yourselves and see whether this change in the level of sex is working for now, whether your needs are being met, whether you feel drawn to each other sexually, romantically. Then you can check in on that by yourselves with some journaling, through talking to friends or a therapist or something. So then when you come to talk about it, you can be clear about where you're at and the two of you can see if the relationship is still what you both want. I like to think of relationships as collaborations. I think that's probably clear by now. And so I suppose if you feel like collaborating through these changes in desire and you feel drawn to each other, even if not sexually right now, then that's what matters. That's the most important thing. I hope that helps. I'm going to do one more question. Right. How do you tell someone you're newly seeing that you don't have any dating experience? Thank you so much to this person for sending in this question, because I know that a lot of people struggle with this. I often hear it from clients and I often hear it at workshops and events. I think worrying about a lack of experience is so common, so I'm excited to get into it. Right, so there is an assumption that not having experience is not ideal for the other person, for the person that you're dating. Maybe you worry that it's inconvenient to them, that it reflects badly on you somehow, that it's embarrassing, or that the other person will read the connection differently once they know that you don't have as much experience. And this is, once again, where communicating your reality is really important. When a topic is nervy for whatever reason, we can have the impulse to try and talk about it quickly, get it over with quickly, and try and not make a big deal out of it, to not linger on the topic for too long, and that's if you even bring it up at all. But this has the opposite effect, because the other person doesn't get the whole picture of what you're trying to convey and has more room to draw their own assumptions and conclusions from it that might not be correct. I talked about this a bit already earlier, about the two different perspectives that exist in two people who are dating and how connecting means bridging that gap to be closer together in reality. And that's what you need to do here with communicating that you don't have as much experience. think about it in that way, about bridging the gap. What do you want them to understand about the fact that you don't have much experience? Do you just want them to be aware of it? Does it just feel like something you want to share? Would you like to have more time than might be assumed to get used to different parts of dating? Maybe you want to let them know I might be moving slower. Are you looking for some help or support with communicating things that you've not had to communicate before? If intimacy is the hurdle you're worried about, I have some help to offer with that. I think that needs its own episode though. I'll do that next week. I'll stick with just sharing for now. But in short, with navigating intimacy, the advice that I have is to see where you're both at and look at the ways that you both want to explore and experiment, rather than feeling like you have to do particular levels of intimacy in order or in certain ways. I mean, that's sort of what I'm saying with the emotional stuff too. Meet up in the same reality and then see what you'd both like to do there. And honestly, every new connection is unique. The ways you relate can be informed by past dating, of course they can, but also by past friendships, past connections with colleagues, comrades, and the whole rest of your life, and your thoughts and experience. All of these things affect a new connection, not just dating experience. And the grass is always greener. Many people who do have lots of experience with dating are worried about their past experiences getting in the way of new connections. Whether they have an increased sensitivity to certain aspects of dating, maybe they have habits and patterns that they're looking to change in dating, maybe fears and biases that they're trying to process and trying not to project onto their new date. Having experience has its drawbacks as well. The grass is not always greener. And now, for the practical side of telling someone what to say. Well, let's use the same formula as before, starting with the situation, then the sensation, the interpretation, and the emotion. So, the situation is, I want to let you know that I don't have much dating experience. The sensation could be, thinking about this honestly makes my heart race, makes my palms sweaty, makes my knees weak, arms are heavy, whatever sensations you notice. The interpretation could be, I worry about this being a deal breaker for you, or I worry about being new and clumsy at this, or taking longer to do certain things or feel comfortable with certain parts of dating. And then the emotion could be, I feel worried, I feel sad, I feel frustrated, I feel embarrassed. And give that to them, give it some space. Again, pick a good time and location to have this conversation. And from there, you can navigate what would help, what you'd like, and how they feel about it. And honestly, babes, if they're not cool with it, if they're not cool with you not having dating experience, then they're not the one for you right now. Not necessarily anything bad about them, but they're just not the one for you right now. You've got this. You're ready for this. And please let me know how it goes. Okay, that is all from me this episode. All that remains is for me to mention my upcoming events, do some gratitude, and give you the secret emoji for the episode. So here we go. Events. This Saturday is the Who Do I Fancy workshop, but it is sold out. So if you wanted to come but didn't get a ticket and you'd be interested in me running the event again, please let me know. On Sunday the 26th of October, it's Queer Farm Club at Spitalfield City Farm. There's going to be a delicious community meal that you can help cook, you can explore the farm, and Izzy has got some fun crafts planned. On Saturday the 8th of November, it's the How to Ask People Out workshop. There's still tickets for that. It's in Deptford at the Albany, and it's £15. Although if you use the code TENNERTICKET, one word, then you can get a ticket for a tenner. So there you go, it's a little treat. Thursday the 13th of November, we have a very special edition of the Sapphic Mix and Mingle at the Vagina Museum. This month, the Sapphic Mix and Mingle is specifically for anyone on the ACE spectrum. So if that's you, get your tickets and make sure to wear a jumper, because the Vagina Museum, even when it is full of queer cuties, the room can get a bit chilly, especially by the end of the night. So we have some blankets, but definitely bring a jumper, wrap up warm. Friday the 14th of November is an event that I'm running. Although it's not specifically for queer singles, there will be a great many queer singles there, because it is CMAT karaoke. Karaoke based on and around the music of CMAT. And it's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to sing with you all. On Wednesday the 19th of November, it's the monthly Mix and Mingle at Dalston Superstore. Get your tickets for that. It's pay what you can, but the cheaper tickets tend to run out early. So if you want a cheap ticket, head over there. And then we are into December and it's Christmas events. So we've got the Disabled Queer Christmas Party on Saturday the 6th of December. We've got DILF, the Sexy Silly Night of Performances and Dancing. It's my friend Rose, Top Surgery Fundraiser, and that is on Friday the 19th of December. And finally, if you have enjoyed this podcast but would like some more support, if you'd like to work with me one-on-one, I do have some slots available before I go on break for Christmas. So please book yourself a £10 tester session and we can chat about your dating woes and wants and see how working together could be helpful. There's a few different options. And all of the links will be in the show notes, as always, along with the link to submit your question to be answered on this podcast anonymously. So please do write in, please comment, review, rate, all of that. And the secret emoji of the episode, which you can comment to show that you listened all the way to the end, is the red flag emoji. I want to mention some gratitude for everyone involved in the talk at the Common Press. And for whatever company it is that makes those white vegan, the vegan white chocolate Malteser type things, they're called snowballs. And they're just better than they should be. They're so delicious. And I'm going to go eat some now because I saved some to eat when the podcast was over. Because it's been such a mission to record it this week. So have a lovely rest of your day. I'll see you next time. Bye.